it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I think that's part of what we, you know, watch film for. That's part of what we come out here and practice for is, you know, knowing checkdowns and knowing, hey, you know, my first look, if they're giving it to me, you know, take it. And I think that's part of playing quarterback in this league, find completions. And I feel, you know, confident in myself. You know, I feel like at times last year when I got the ball out on time and I got the ball to the right guy, we moved the ball well. So I think just trying to, you know, start off this season with that mindset and, like I said, stay ahead of the chains and do my part and, you know, finding completions and not holding the ball.
Patriots quarterback Drake May. We are just about an hour away from kickoff at Gillette. The Patriots and the Raiders, week one of this 2025-26 season, about to get underway here in New England. We've already had a couple of games, kickoff and end. This week, but for the Patriots, here it is, the beginning of what many are hoping will be a dramatic turnaround from the last two seasons, and by that I mean maybe even doubling up on your win total here, as that is what Las Vegas has them at, over-under of 8.5 wins this season, and a lot of that is going to rest on the shoulders, or should I say the right shoulder, of that man Drake May, who is a lot of expectations heaped on top of him here, as most quarterbacks who were drafted that high in their second year often do. That comes with the job. That comes with the territory. And for Drake May, while it wasn't the greatest rookie season we've ever seen, there was certainly a lot there that have people optimistic going into this year.
No doubt. And it's interesting that response. It was my question about just, hey, you know what? Is Josh trying to teach you to kind of take what the defense gives you? And he's like, yeah, I'll take that check down all day. And that's where you, Shime, I think, are like, man, can we open it things up? Can we use his athletic ability? And that's what I'd love to see, a couple of just quarterback design runs. I'd like to see some bootlegs moving out of the pocket. But I also would like to see him make the smart play and check it down if there's not a play downfield as well. So, look, Drake May, a huge, huge season. I think he's got special traits when it comes to his abilities and his skill level. Can he be a winning quarterback? Can he be the franchise quarterback on this team? I'm not so sure, but I need to see a big jump in your second year. Usually that's when players do it, Shime. So a lot of pressure on this kid to show that he is a franchise quarterback this year.
Yeah, and look, I'm fine with some checkdowns. Like, I get it. You short passes, I understand. You got to get into a rhythm. But at the same time, I want to be able to see Drake May excel at the things he does really well, which is just six-step drop and just rip that thing. And that's kind of what he was in college. He was a big game hunter. And then when it wasn't there, he was able to use his legs and create, whether it was by staying behind the line of scrimmage and creating time for his receivers to just get open, or it was creating, running the football and gaining yards himself. And so that's kind of what I'm wanting from Drake May this year. I want him, as you said, I want him to take that leap. I want him to show the rest of the NFL doubters here in New England that he is the guy going forward. And to do that, you can't just have this constant short passing game. I know that's going to be part of it. I know that's who Josh McDaniels is. I understand. But at the same time, you also have to kind of let the man cook.
Yeah. I want to bring up one little point. If I'm going to read a stat line, tell me what you think of this stat line. 3,500 yards, 6% completion percentage, 29 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Would you take that?
Yes.
Yes.
That was Bo Nix last year.
Yeah.
So give me what Bo Nix did last year.
And then toss in 400-500 yards rushing as well, a couple rushing touchdowns, and then you are really cooking.
Yeah, and Nix had a great offensive line, so, I mean, that helps.
But arguably the best in football.
Receivers weren't really anything special. Like, Cortland Sutton's fine, but he's not great.
No.
And they don't really have anybody else. So
they didn't have a great running back.
Yeah, and that should be, for someone like Drake May and the offensive coordinator like Josh McDaniels, that should be a good inspiration for him, because you could get there. I mean, you could. You have more talent, I think, in your receiver room now. And Josh McDaniels spoke about Drake May earlier this week.
You know, I mean, he's the quarterback of our football team. And so I've always had high expectations for the quarterback room in general. I know how hard they work. So I have confidence in his preparation. I know there's going to be opportunities to improve as we go through every day, every week. It's my first opportunity to coach a game with him and with a lot of our guys, you know. So I'm sure I'm going to learn a lot, but I always go in, you know, my feelings are always based on what I see every day and how hard they work and what they put into it. I couldn't ask Drake to do more than what he's doing. He's trying, you know, to understand exactly what we're doing. It's really, you know, trying to be as well-versed as he can on what we know from the Raiders. But just looking forward to going out there and watching him play and seeing our entire group out there together.
Shime, you said that the Drake May, Josh McDaniels relationship and partnership is going to be the most important narrative storyline of this season. Why do you think that?
Well, I just think that if Drake May is your future, if Drake May is your franchise, like some of us believe he is, it is of the utmost importance that he grows in the correct direction. And that is incumbent on the offensive coordinator, especially when your head coach is a defensive-minded guy. And I know Vrabel is going to have a hand in the, you know, growth of Drake May, but he's not going to be as hands-on as the offensive coordinator. If you brought in Ben Johnson as the head coach, mm-hmm. he is directly responsible for the growth of Drake May. And that's how I feel about Josh McDaniels. And, I mean, outside of Tom Brady, Josh McDaniels has not inspired in the growth of any young quarterback that I've ever seen.
Mac Jones.
He really grew into that second season.
he wasn't the coordinator the second season. First season he was, and that was the best season Mac Jones has ever had.
Sure, I mean
combined.
Okay, great, but like
can't say that he didn't have a positive impact on a young quarterback. He did.
Okay, so once out of what the other seven times that he did, it wasn't very great in Vegas for 2 years.
True.
It wasn't good in Denver. It wasn't good with the Rams. Like he just. Outside of Belichick being with Bill Belichick,
I think
he has not been good.
Yeah,
he was head coach. You know, in the Rams, the Raiders and the Broncos, he was the head coach. So I think there's a little bit different dynamic. But I hear what you're saying. What I do like about Josh being the coach for him right now is I think he's going to teach Drake how to read defenses. And that was what Tom was so – you know what? They go up, he read pre-snap read, and he check into a play that was a little bit safer. He's teaching Drake probably how to read a defense better than any other offensive coordinator can do it. I think that is one of Josh's strengths with young quarterbacks is getting reading defenses, knowing what play to check into to get you out of whatever call you had versus that defense and get you in safer plays. That is a big part of what I'm looking for out of Drake.
And I think that's really important. And I believe it was on one of Edelman's multiple podcasts. They talked about how much information Josh McDaniels gives you until that microphone cuts off. Yep. And I think that's really good for Drake. But I think Josh also needs to be careful that Drake May is very, very different than what Tom Brady was. Tom Brady was a surgeon. Mm. He was precise. That's why he was so good at taking the short gains one by one and moving it slow. He was patient and he was surgical. Drake May, to this point, is neither of those things.
Yeah.
He is
more
very
of a gunslinger.
He is explosive and a gunslinger. And so the way in which you helped Tom Brady grow is going to be very different the way in which you make Drake May better.
Tom Brady's an assassin!
Certainly is. Before we move on from this topic, Ernie Adams was on the Games with Names podcast. Is that Edelman and Gronk or just Edelman?
I think just Edelman. Maybe Ernie's on every week. I'm not sure.
He could be. I don't know.
Because Gronk
sure.
is the dudes on dudes.
That's dudes with dudes on dudes with names on games.
It's too many podcasts.
It's too much stuff on stuff.
Yeah, just
with
one
stuff.
Podcast.
Either way, Julian Edelman talked to Ernie Adams, and he had this to say about Drake May.
What do you think a good year is for Drake May?
The basic standard. First year, you got to show some potential, which he did. Second year, you got to show some significant improvement. Obviously, we all love him to be championship-level quarterback, but you've really got to show some real significant improvement. Third year, you got to be a player. I mean, a guy who can go out and when the championship's on the line, you're ready to go. So he's clearly has shown potential. We got to see some real progress here.
Yeah, let's hope so, especially with that quarterback class you already have. As you said, Bo Nix, who had a very, very strong season his rookie year in Denver. Jaden Daniels and the heights that he reached in his rookie year. Even a guy like Michael Penix, who's going to be starting today.
Huge
for
fan of him.
Atlanta, who I liked in Washington, sure, and who didn't get a chance to start. It was not quite the same situation as Brissett and Drake May here, but he didn't play until the end of the year.
Talk about ripping it.
He'll be out there ripping it, too. There's a lot of pressure on Drake May as one of the top three guys in that class. A class that had quarterbacks drafted all throughout the first round to make this leap this year. And I think there's more pressure on him maybe not Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams was the first overall pick, so he's got it too. But those two, I'd say they're neck and neck.
Especially because Caleb's in such a tremendous situation. Yeah. You get Ben Johnson. You have a ton of weapons. They revamp the offensive line. Like, he clearly has the most pressure on him. Drake May is coming off what everybody believes was a disaster of an organizational season, and so he's going to have a little bit more leeway, but he definitely needs to show positive growth. Otherwise, people are going to get on him real quick.
Yeah,
Drake. But part of that growth is I want to see, can he handle the pressure? Because I am wondering, can he handle this market, this type of pressure, this type of scrutiny? It hasn't been answered for me. And so that concerns me a little bit, is the pressure in this town to at that position is going to be so much scrutiny. Can he stand up to it? Does he use it as fuel, or does it get to him and does it bother him? Does it impact his game in a negative way? I'm not sure I know the answer to that, and that's what I'm going to be looking for as well.
I have some good news here from a noted friend of the morning show, Mark Daniels.
Okay.
He says that in the rain, Andy Borogalis hit a 49-yard field goal on the lighthouse end of the stadium.
Wow.
So how about that?
Okay.
With no pressure and no defense.
Yeah, was it on a tee or was somebody holding it?
I don't know. I did not get that detail, but I did hit a 49-yarder over on the lighthouse side. Is that the open side?
Yes.
Is that the side with
it
the wind?
It is the open
side.
Okay,
so there you go. That's not an easy thing to do.
Well, you want to see the ball going through there in warm-ups, so that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Positive.
Patriots kickoff returners in warm-ups. Henderson, Stevenson, Gibson, and Corey Ballantyne.
Wow.
Which, Ramondre Stevenson returning kicks. How about that?
Yeah.
I'd be surprised to see that. All three of them.
Yeah, that's what you mentioned earlier, Ted, where they're going more towards the running backs than they are natural returners, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah, it's more like a 9-on-7 play if you kind of look at the design of the play as opposed to the traditional kind of kickoff. So, interesting. Let's see Trayvon get one to the house, hopefully.
One more from Daniels. Patriots punt returners and warm-ups, Marcus Jones and DeMario Douglas. And we touched on this off the air, but Marcus Jones, I don't think we'll see him on offense today, but I think he was with the Midday Show talking about, the last guy didn't know that I could play offense. Marcus Jones, I thought the second-year injury was about as depressing of a moment as there was, because I had really high hopes for him. I thought he was going to be on defense in that secondary. I thought he was going to make some noise, and just what he could do in the return game and even as like a gadget player in the offense, I thought could be so useful and just a fun guy to have. You know, like, there wasn't much fun that you could say was being had last year. And when Jones went down with the injury, I thought that was the end of it.
Knows that I play offense, but I don't know.
End of the fun. He's got a dynamic piece to him. I wish they use him on offense more than they do. I think he fights like hell in the secondary, and I think he's a really good nickel slot. He's just undersized. He gets beat by bigger receivers, and that's an issue.
Yep, certainly is. Okay, Chris Scheim's going to get you caught up on what's trending, and when we come back, the debut of the top Ted list. Scheim and I are just going to pepper Ted with a bunch of random questions, and that's coming up right after this.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
His arm was going forward, but was he throwing a football?
Well, was it forced out by Charles Woodson?
Reviewing the play, the quarterback's arm was going forward. It is an incomplete pass. Second and 10 on the 42.
Wow.
Ah, 25 years later, still sounds nice hearing those words, doesn't it?
Sure does.
It's WEEI Football Sunday here. We are live in our Brighton studios, powered by Verizon. It's nice to have you with us here this morning as we get you ready for the Patriots and the Raiders, who 25 years ago played a game in the snow. Potentially, and we'll save this for the top Ted list, one of the more important games in the history of the franchise. But, Ted, let's go back in time to that snowy day in Foxborough. Your clearest memory of the Tuck Rule game?
I couldn't believe it. I thought that was a fumble. I did not realize, I didn't even think that would be ruled an incomplete pass when I saw it. My former Colorado Buff, Greg Beekert, the middle linebacker for the Raiders at the time, fell on the fumble, and I thought, oh boy, I thought the game was over potentially. But then they took a long time to review it, and the longer they took, the more all of us on the sideline were like, wait a minute, they actually might overturn this. This might go in our favor. And it did. And here's the thing. The Raiders, they all bitch and moan about it. Lincoln Kennedy was a union rep with me, and I'd meet him out in for our meetings in Hawaii every year. And he'd always be talking smack to me. And I'm like, but Lincoln, you still could have stopped us. Even though that play was ruled in our favor, okay, now stop us. You couldn't. And
then there was a whole overtime.
They got the whole overtime. But you know what? That team was pretty damn good. You had Eric Allen, Trace Armstrong, Tim Brown, Rich Gannon, Lincoln Kennedy.
That team was great.
Jerry Rice, Charles Woodson.
John Gruden is still mad about that.
Oh, yeah.
that was a really good Raiders team, man. So,
they were in the Super Bowl, the next year, right?
Yes.
Against the Buccaneers.
Yeah. 2002, and they lost that, too.
Yep, yes, they did.
And then right. Gruden switched sides. And then the Raiders after that haven't been good really since. I mean, after those two
they've
years.
They've been a laughing stock.
Two decades of just futility for
the Las Vegas Raiders.
They have,
thank you, Wiggins.
They have like one win, and I'm pretty sure Kerry Collins was the quarterback in the playoffs. That is
okay.
I think because I know Derek Carr did not win a playoff game. Unfortunately,
yep.
I loved him coming out. That wasn't great, but you know, like it's just they have struggled mightily.
Four coaches in the last 8 years, one playoff appearance in the last 8 years.
Yeah.
And for a franchise that was a proud franchise, I know they moved around a little bit, but like that was considered, you know, like just win, baby. That was a whole thing, you know. They had a charismatic owner. He was really involved in all that NFL stuff. Like
ownership the tone, though. Mark Davis, the new owner. I mean, you ever check him out during
quite,
the game?
Not quite. It's the same as the
not
old
real
man.
Inspired,
great haircut.
Right?
Wow. Really, it's not quite like that. Although I will say, for all the jokes that you make about him, whenever anybody goes to that play, whenever they go out to Vegas to play, they always look around and say, "This place is incredible," including Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
What do you call it? The Taj Mahal.
Yep. Yeah.
So you know, he may be a bit of a doofus, but he's spending his money in. For the players anyway and the people involved in that team spending it in the right place until they ran out of money and had to fire Josh McDaniels, which was a whole other thing there. But, yeah, one other thing real quick. Josh McDaniels said it's just another game. No big deal. I don't you know, look at this any differently. He's lying through his teeth, isn't he?
Has to be.
Do you remember him fist pumping on the field after the Patriots beat the Broncos?
That?
Or the Broncos beat the Patriots,
yeah.
I mean, in 09? You remember that?
Yeah.
He went on the feet. He was like, yeah! It was the biggest thing
of his life. The Raiders players were smoking cigars in the locker room when he got canned.
Yeah.
Like, he has to be. He has to hate them. He has to have some sort of revenge factor in this game.
I didn't see that coming. I just thought he would learn his lesson from the Broncos tenure. And he did this, made the same mistakes, just insecure and paranoid, created an environment that wasn't conducive for winning and got his ass fired twice in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
Twice.
On Halloween.
Dude.
He's out trick-or-treating, he comes back.
Doesn't have a job.
Yeah, that's a tough scene.
Oh, yikes.
All right, without any further ado, let's get to it. I'm excited about this one. Ted Johnson is here for a few more minutes, and while he's here, let's get to the top Ted list.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Top Ted list.
All right, Ted, we got 10 questions, Shime and I, and we'll go back and forth here with our questions. I will start off with question number 10.
Yes, sir.
And that is, what Raider did you most like and dislike playing against?
Oh,
so it's two questions.
Yeah, good question. All right, so the Raider I most liked playing against was Jerry Rice.
You most liked playing against
Rice? Playing because I didn't think I'd ever be on the same field as Jerry Rice. Mm. There's certain players I played with where I was like, wow, I can't believe I'm on the field with this guy. Jerry Rice was one of them. He was hanging on there with the Raiders at the end of his career. And I got to play against him when he was on that team, so I thought that was cool. The guys,
he had a couple other. He went to like the Broncos, right? Too, and, like the Seahawks or something, didn't he? Wasn't Jerry Rice in the
sure
Seahawks?
Did. I think his last year was with the Seahawks, probably year 25.
Talking
I don't
about
know.
A guy who doesn't want to let go, huh?
But my first preseason good, game ever as a rookie, I started the first game as a rookie. Started the first preseason game as a rookie next to the Undertaker, Vincent Brown, and we played the Raiders when they were in L.A. And I went up against Steve Wisniewski and Kevin Gogan. Huge, massive, all-pro guards. And I, on the first play, it was a direct run. And I went and I hit Wisniewski as hard as I could. And I didn't know what the rules were. I guess I wasn't supposed to be going that hard because Wisniewski and Gogan, they would talk to each other as they come up to the line of scrimmage. Oh, watch out for 52. Oh, he's coming to play today, Gogs. Oh, they're talking smack to me, to each other, as they're walking up to the line of scrimmage because apparently I was playing too hard in a preseason game. So, Wisniewski, you can go screw. Gogan, you can go screw. I was you know what? I was just trying to make the team. And those guys didn't like it, so those two guys can go pound sand.
Well, we just looked back at the tuck rule. What is your favorite opening day game or moment for you?
Well, you know what? So my first game I ever played in as a pro was against the Browns. We won on the last play. Curtis Martin won. It was great, awesome. But my first, like, big, holy crap, I'm in the NFL moment was the second game of my rookie year. We played the Miami Dolphins. Dan Marino, on the first play from scrimmage, he hands the ball off to Spikes. I forget his first name, but his last name was Spikes. And I'll never forget, Marino couldn't stand the way he hit the hole. He's yelling at him, what are you doing? What are you hitting? And I was in awe of Dan Marino chewing out his running back that I didn't get in the huddle. Vincent Brown had to yell at me to get into the huddle because I was so fascinated by Dan Marino ripping his running back a new one. And then you hear stories about Marino being not the easiest teammate to play with.
Who is going to lead the Patriots in sacks this year, Ted?
It's got to be Harold Landry, right? I mean, he's and I think I said Clavon earlier, but Harold Landry, the last few years, he's had multiple double-digit sacks. To me, he's your best edge rusher. So Harold Landry has got to lead the team in sacks. Last year, I think it was between Keon White and Dietrich Wise that had 5 sacks that each of them, those guys did. Can you give me somebody that gets double-digit sacks on this team, please? Harold Landry is that guy.
Scale of 1 to 10, Ted, where is your faith level at with Stephon Diggs and what he will bring to the team this season?
It's in the middle. it's below 7. I'm going to go 5. I'm a little bit concerned. I've already seen evidence, a couple of incidences where it's just this drip, drip, drip. He might not have this one big blow-up event where you go, okay, this guy's not good for. It's going to be little things that are tedious, that are going to drain energy. I just don't think he's going to, his best version of himself here. I think he'll be okay, but I think ultimately we're going to be disappointed in his tenure.
Are you talking in terms of play or his attitude?
I think it's one leads to the other.
Yeah.
I think the bad attitude, it just confirmed.
So not even like a honeymoon period? Because like all the other team, you had like a year or two where it's like, hey, everything's great with Steph Diggs, and then all of a sudden he gets, I'm not getting the ball
enough.
You
know what? I didn't like his press conference. He felt like he had to bring up something that happened 3 weeks before.
It was weird.
It was, he was grandstanding. It was, to me, unnecessary. And it shows maybe a guy that doesn't quite have his eye on the ball. And I think when you got a guy that's in a new place, if you don't start winning, he's going to find it very boring up here. And I just worry about where his mind's going to go. He likes other things to do besides play football. We know that.
Yeah, he does.
So I hope he's locked in and focused. I'm not betting on it.
All right, Ted, who is the most overlooked player on the Patriots roster?
I think Mago brought it up, and I agree. I think Matt Collins is going to be better than what people think. Ooh. I think mostly because of his size in the red zone. He only had 31 catches last year, only 31, but 5 of them for touchdowns. I think he's going to be a big red zone target and be more impressive than people think.
Number 5.
So before I actually get to number 5, I'm curious, just an addendum on the Matt Collins take. How do you feel about the no shoes thing?
I have no problem with it.
Okay, cool.
In a world where they want uniformity and everybody be the same, some guys got to have a little bit of individuality to express themselves, and I'm okay with it.
All right, so the actual number 5, who will be the key difference maker in a win or loss today for the New England Patriots?
It's easy, baby. It's Drake May. He's gonna be the reason we win or we lose. We need him to be the reason we win. Right? He's got to take over games, especially in critical situations. The Patriots, the last 2 years, have had 25 games in which they were going into the fourth quarter where the game was within 3 or less points. A lot of nip-tuck games at the end of these games for the Patriots. Can he be the guy that has the game-winning drive? He didn't prove it last year. Hopefully he does this year.
The Patriots committed a ton of penalties last year, Ted.
Number 4.
Question number 4 is, how many penalties will they get flagged for today, and will this be a problem for them again this season?
I hope Vrabel's been preaching, let's not lose these games. More games are lost than they are won. I think they buttoned up a lot of the messy kind of procedural stuff. I think they get 4 penalties, which isn't it's not going to be 8 or 10 like they can typically get. I think it's on the lower end. I think from an offensive line standpoint, I think they'll clean up some stuff. They'll get a couple holding penalties. But ultimately, not a bad day in the penalty department, just 4.
Number 3.
All right, we talked a lot about Pete Carroll. You've already shared some stories. Do you have a favorite Pete Carroll story or moment as your head coach?
You know what? Pete was great. A lot of positive energy, Chris. The thing that was starting to bug me, though, his mantra was that it got really, really old, is, let's go win, guys, because it's fun. Enough with the fun. I don't want to have fun. I want to win, Pete. But winning is fun. Yeah, I know. But Pete would just hammer the fact that when you win, you have fun. Yeah, I know that, Pete, but we're not
winning. The
negative
side of it, the nasty side of it, God, it detracts from the good times and the fun of it all.
I love you, Pete. Pete, one of the nicest human beings ever, but I got tired of the let's go win because it's fun.
Did he always chomp on gum even back then?
He did, man. He's just got always been nervous
energy. Always chomping.
Constantly.
Just like a cow, just constantly chomping.
I've never seen him in just a totally chill, relax. His energy is always frenetic.
Yeah.
It's just never, just even keeled.
Number two.
Ted, was the Snow Bowl game against the Raiders the most important game in Patriots history?
I don't know how it can't be. You know, obviously, just it was huge, the trajectory that the two franchises went on after that game. I think it was a bigger, it was just a better team. When I named all the, you know, Rich Gannon, Lincoln Kennedy, Tim Brown, Eric Allen. These were, they had a hell of a team. And for us to win that game, I think it just set us on a track that we never looked back. And so I think that – I don't know how you don't look at that game and don't think it was the most important in franchise history.
Number one.
All right, Ted. Arcan and I, bit of degenerates, I have to tell you. We are playing the Vegas Raiders today.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you have – what's your poison when it comes to casino games?
Okay. Casino games is blackjack. I love blackjack. I'm all about the blackjack. That's my favorite game. If you know what, craps is fun. I need to be into it, and you know, I'm a little bit rusty. But there's the most fun is had at the craps table.
Craps is the best.
People are yelling and screaming.
It is.
I don't understand how to play, but I like just being in the area.
It's the most social game by far.
Without
question. When someone, especially like the Lady Luck, when like some smoke show girl is throwing dice, and she's hitting her number, so it means everybody's winning.
Yeah.
And you just go on like where they win 12 in a row or something like that. It will be so hype in that casino. When the dice are hot, there's nothing better than playing craps when the dice are hot.
Is there a casino that, or a hotel that you preferred when you were in Vegas? Have you been to Vegas a lot? Are you in Vegas regularly?
Yes. Different times of my life. And I'd say I had different activities at different times.
Sure.
I'd say at one time of my life, my two favorite places to go were Spearmint Rhino. It was life-changing. It's not that way anymore. Sorry, Spearmint Rhino.
That's all about Olympic Gardens.
You ain't what you used to be anymore. Yeah. I can just tell you that. But the other one was Rehab at the Hard Rock.
Okay.
One of their more famous pool parties. That was way back then when I had still lots to learn. But now, I love the win. Now when I go, I go to the win, and I just like hanging out by the pool, playing my games at night, going to nice dinners, and I'm a big sucker for the shows. I like all the shows.
Oh, nice.
In Vegas. It's a lot of fun.
Very good. Ted Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, with our top Ted list. Ted has to leave because he's got very important television to go do, which means it's just Shime and I for the last segment.
Yes, sir.
And as we just mentioned, we are incredible degenerates.
Massive.
And we're going to spend the final 10 to 15 minutes of the show just talking about gambling and things that we're gambling.
Can't wait.
So that's coming up. Ted, do we have a pick for the game today?
So I got the Pats winning this one 24-23. Amazingly, I forgot this. They didn't score over 25 points one time last year. They're the only team that did not score over 25 points. They don't get 25 this game. I think it's going to be a nip tuck. I do like the teams going from the West Coast to the East Coast. That 1 o'clock kick usually impacts the West Coast team, so I'm factoring that in as well. I just think the Patriots, if I got them winning eight games, this has got to be one of them. So I got the Patriots with a one-point victory, 24-23.
Ted, great debut. We'll see you. We'll see you next week. But for this show, we'll see you next
time. I had a great time, boys. Look forward to doing this all season with you.
Heck yeah. Thanks, Ted.
All right, Teddy's out of here. That means it's just Shime and I. And we will come back at the end with some picks for you, some predictions, and some looks ahead around the league at all the other games being played here. We've been really just talking about this game. A lot of nice matchups, interesting matchups here in week one of this season that we will get to as well. Don't go anywhere. That's coming up in the final segment of WEEI Football Sunday.
The Las Vegas Raiders.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's WEEI Football Sunday. We got a few minutes left here before we hand things off to Westwood One coverage. What games do we have today, Ken? Do we know?
Well, Westwood One tonight, we have the big one, Bills and Ravens.
Bills and Ravens.
8 o'clock
tonight.
Right after Six Rings.
Very nice.
And we have the Red Sox during the day.
Looking forward to that. And, of course, yes, Red Sox we will have here today as they try and avoid a sweep in Arizona, which we don't need to talk about that right now. It's football Sunday. I don't have to talk about what's going on with the Red Sox. But what I would like to talk about is with my good friend Chris Scheim here. What are you on today, buddy? And I don't mean like what are you on, you know, but I mean like what in terms of
I'm always on something.
The betting apps, what are you on today?
First one of the day I want to tell you about is I love the Dolphins money line. Any chance I can get at betting against Daniel Jones is tremendous. Inside in a dome because they're playing in Indianapolis today. I expect the Dolphins to come out looking fast and want to be aggressive on offense. So tied with that, I love Tyreek Hill. 100-yard game for Tyreek Hill is almost 3-1.
Wow.
It's plus 280, which I think is way too high. I expect the Dolphins to want to win. Mike McDaniel needs to start fast. Otherwise, his ass is grass very quickly this season. He is going to be on the hot seat. So I love the Dolphins and Tyreek Hill today.
Yeah, they are really going to. He's on a lot of lists of like first coach
100%.
Fired, and he should be. I mean, that's, you know, that's a guy like him who's so polarizing just because of his attitude and the way he is and how different he is from like every other coach in the history of the NFL. When things aren't going well, oh, it's easy to just dump on a guy like that. And I like him. I mean, personally, I think he's an interesting guy and a pretty good coach.
I agree.
And certainly a good offensive mind. But, yeah, that team's got a lot of problems. That team's got a lot of problems in the trenches. They got a lot of problems all over the field. But you're right. I mean, compared to the Colts, I'd say they're in pretty good shape.
People forget, too. Like, I understand last year was kind of gross. Tua didn't play the entire season. Tyreek Hill was banged up a lot, so he didn't even have 1,000 yards. The year before that, though, 1,800 yards in 16 games. Like, Tyreek Hill with Tua, as much as we may rag on that team, very good together.
Yeah, it's true. The only thing I'd say is the Colts' secondary is pretty good, right? They got Treverius Ward and Xavier Howard.
Oh, they
Howard
did get Treverius Ward in the offseason. Yeah, I mean,
who's the
that's
other
great.
Guy?
But
they have one other guy that I like. Oh, Kenny Moore, who I like, too. They got three pretty good corners on that
Yeah,
team.
But Tyreek Hill is a whole different animal than your normal receiver.
Absolutely. All right, here's a bet I like today. And it's one that I keep seeing him talking about on ESPN. And that would be the Pittsburgh Steelers visiting the New York Jets.
Oh, tell it to him.
Aaron Rodgers, who I still can picture with that American flag running out of that tunnel and then immediately rupturing his Achilles. This is going to be his first game with the Steelers going up against the Justin Fields Jets. The Steelers are only favored by 2.5. And I think you could pump that up maybe 3 points, really, and feel good about it. I think the Steelers are going to blow doors here. I think Rodgers is going to have a pretty strong game, and I just don't believe in Justin Fields. I know they're going to go to the run game a lot with that Jets offense and Breece Hall and everybody, but I just don't really believe in them. I think the Steelers are going to be playing for their coach as well, who's another guy who may be on a bit of a hot streak this season just because of the – you know, winning seasons every year are fine, but if you don't actually ever go anywhere, then that can start to get old, too. So I really like the Steelers to come out strong, and I think the Jets are in a world of trouble today.
Lowest total of the weekend in this game as well at 37.5, which
feels very low.
The next closest is like 42.5. It's wild how low the total is in this game. I'm with you. I love the Steelers here. I love the Steelers team total over. It's only 20.5. I think they could easily score 3 touchdowns here. Betting on Rodgers to be better this year than last year is something that I am very in favor of.
He wasn't that bad last year, away from the injury. You know, Rodgers last year was okay. You know, like I didn't really think that his numbers, if you look at them, are pretty good.
He was better in the second half, too, once he was starting to be fully healthy again. This year he's fully healthy, and I think he'll be ready to go. The next bet I love is San Francisco this week against the Seattle Seahawks. I think the Seahawks could have one of the better defenses in football, but Kyle Shanahan historically has kind of owned this matchup. Christian McCaffrey is healthy. He's playing. His rush line, by the way, is only 70 yards, like around 70 yards. I love that for him. I love him having a 100-yard game today. I think the 49ers are going to be kind of the surprise team this year after being so bad last year. Brock Purdy got paid. There's some questions injury-wise when it comes to the receivers. I think they're going to be fine. I'm going to take the 49ers laying 1.5 today in Seattle.
I like that. I like that bet, too. And I think Seattle will eventually put it together, but it's going to take a while before they can do that.
Especially because Darnold's first game, like in this Kubiak offense, I don't know exactly how that's going to look.
They lost two of their big receivers. Like, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot that they're going to have to figure out. I think it's a tough week one matchup for them. Here's a player prop that I really like. And I made some money off this guy last year. You probably remember, Sean, Bucky Irving, the running back out there in Tampa Bay. They're taking on Atlanta today, and Irving's
sick
brag. Thank you very much. He is His rushing yard total is over under 66.5, which I think
that's
is easy over right there. I'd go with an anytime touchdown for him, too. And any of the other rushing and receiving yard combo, if you, depending on which sports book you use, sometimes they have more creative ones.
Sure.
Anything with Bucky Irving, I'd probably take the over on today. I love him. I loved him in college, and I think that last year he proved that he's the type of running back, and who knows how long his career is going to be, but he's the type of running back that sort of hit the ground running and is now, I think, a force in this league.
So I want to stay in that game. The total in that game is 47.5. I like the over just because Baker Mayfield showed you last year he can throw the football. I think this Bucs offense is really, really talented. And then Michael Penix, regardless of how you feel about him, has the potential to be the next Jameis Winston of football, where he is just going to grip it and rip it down the field. They are going to try and score as much as possible. I don't know how good that Atlanta defense is going to be. So one of the other props, a man I can't quit. No matter how hard I try, can't quit him. Give me Kyle Pitts to score a touchdown today at 3-1.
Man.
I love the Pitts and Penix connection. Look, in the first 4 weeks of
the
year,
it's like Stockholm syndrome at this point, right?
Yeah,
like,
look,
you've fallen in love with your captor, is what
it's 100%.
Like.
And last year, the first 4 weeks of the season, Kyle Pitts was the number four tight end in fantasy. So, like, he was starting to have a good year till Kirk Cousins got hurt. I think it's going to be good again with Michael Penix. Give me Pitts to score a touchdown.
Very nice. All right, here's another bet I like. The Cleveland Browns hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. It is a 5.5-point Bengals advantage here, and I love Cleveland. I do. And I don't think Cleveland's very good, but it's a division game. It's those two teams. They always have weird close games, not to mention the fact you got Joe Flacco out there, and he's starting. And when he's out there, David Njoku, the two of them, they scored a ton of fantasy points last year. The Bengals also lost week one last year against Gerard Mayo's New England Patriots. So forgive me if I don't have a whole bunch of faith in them, even with Burrow and Chase and all those great players they have. I don't have a whole bunch of confidence in them blowing out Cleveland. They never blow them out, period. And week one, I think, really, I don't know if I'd go Cleveland money line here. I think that's a little bold.
Cleveland!
5.5, though, I'm all over that.
Yeah, to stay in that game again, I'm with you. You mentioned David Njoku. Love David Njoku to score a touchdown today, plus 250. I think that's great odds there. I also like him. Kevin Stefanski's very good at scripting. I think his opening drive is going to be good. Cleveland starts with the ball. David Njoku to score the first touchdown of the game, 16-1. Love a little flyer pizza money on that one as well.
All right, now it's time for our predictions for today's Patriots-Raiders Week 1 matchup. You're not going to... Not going to like mine. I think the Raiders win this game by two scores. I think 23-13, I think, is going to be the final score here. Geno Smith, I don't really have a great amount of confidence in, but I do think that the Raiders will be able to control the clock and get in the end zone against this Patriots defense. I think the offense is going to struggle, and I think May is going to turn it over. So I'm going with the Raiders here, and I think they clear that. Patriots are favored by 2.5, right? So, yeah, I think Raiders win this one relatively easily.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's raining today. That limits what Geno Smith is going to be able to do against you in the air, which I think is very beneficial. Otherwise, I might have bet Brock Bowers to have 3 touchdowns. I'm going to take the Patriots minus 2.5. The running backs are just better. I like Ashton Jeanty. This Patriots running back group is great. Travion Henderson to have a touchdown today. I love Ramondre to have 50-plus rush yards. I also love. Give me the Pats minus 2.5, and I'll take the under 44.5 as well, Arcand. Pats win 21-17.
All right, there you have it. Those are our picks for the day. Christian Arcand, Chris Scheim, I want to say on behalf of Megan Ottolini and Ted Johnson, thanks so much for tuning in today. The maiden voyage here of WEEI Football Sunday. Ken Laird was our producer today. I don't know if I mentioned
Ken.
That enough
Thank
today.
You.
But what a tremendous job by our fearless, intrepid leader.
Great job
Ken
by you guys.
Laird. Wonderful, wonderful work there. I can't wait to see you every single week of the year, Ken, in this seat.
Boy, we're out
on
of time.
Sunday morning. It's going to be really, really great. And that's all the time we have here today. Stick around. We got Red Sox baseball coming your way on WEEI. And we have the Sunday night game coming up as well. The Bills and the Ravens at 8:20 here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Have a great day. Enjoy the football, everybody. Bye.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.